I'll state in advance, this is not my specific area of expertise. I am a physician. I practice internal medicine part-time. I teach public health, women's studies, and English at Portland State, and I run a website called publichealthandsocialjustice.org on which you'll find this lecture as well as a number of others. It's an open access curricular exchange of PowerPoints on a number of different lectures. And so the reason I got interested in this is I do some writing, and I had done some work on luxury primary care clinics and their links with academic medical centers in the United States, and noticed that they were ordering at these clinics all sorts of tests that I felt to be unindicated based on medical criteria. I practice internal medicine. And then got some brochures in the mail asking if I wanted to pay $1,000 for a full body CT scan or a similar test. And so I just started to investigate these further. So what I'll talk about today is briefly go over what evidence-based screening is, talk about some episodes of, or some examples rather, of unnecessary testing, the risks of unnecessary testing, the link between unnecessary testing and luxury care, and the current anti-science and pseudoscience environment that we see with our administration that is soon to change, and then how does one recognize health scams? So these are the criteria with which most of you are likely familiar for an evidence-based screening test. First of all, the disease must be reasonably common, significantly affect the duration and or quality of life. There must exist acceptable and effective treatments, and an asymptomatic period during which detection and treatment can improve outcome. Treatment during the asymptomatic period must be superior to treatment once symptoms appear, and the test should be safe, affordable, and have adequate sensitivity and specificity. So these are some common examples: pap smears, mammography, blood pressure monitoring for those over 21, cholesterol tests, and oral glucose tolerance testing during pregnancy. Universal testing of newborns for certain congenital disorders, and abdominal ultrasounds for especially men, but also women with less strong evidence who have coronary risk factors and or a positive family history of abdominal aortic aneurysm, and particularly that being the case for smokers. Unfortunately, there is a lot of underuse of appropriate screening tests in the United States, which tends to be more common among non-whites, those of lower socioeconomic status, the un- or underinsured, and this underuse is linked to adverse outcomes. And just one example among many is the fact that we see an advanced stage of breast cancer at the time of diagnosis, as well as lower survival rates among African Americans. Here's just one rather comic example of unnecessary testing, and that's routine fetal ultrasonography or fetal ultrasound keepsake photos. And one famous couple that took this to the extreme was Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes, who bought their own ultrasound machine, which can cost you anywhere between $15,000 and $200,000 on the open market, and took daily ultrasounds of baby Suri. Unfortunately, vertebrate data suggests that prolonged and frequent use of fetal ultrasound can cause abnormalities in fetal brain development, behavior, and body weight. Now, Suri's very cute, so she seems to be developing normally, but there certainly are risks associated with this. The FDA considers the promotion, selling, or leasing of ultrasound equipment for the purposes of making keepsake fetal videos an unapproved use of a medical device, and in fact, such use may also, in certain states, violate the law. Another example is routine electronic fetal heart rate monitoring, and this has not been demonstrated to decrease the rate of cerebral palsy, but has been linked to the increase in C-sections that we've seen recently. Now this, I have to say, this is the PowerPoint I uploaded 2 months ago. This is not my most recent one, which is a problem because this has a lot more slides. Is there a way, I have a disk that we can just slide in, because I'm just concerned that we'll go. Yeah, I uploaded one on the 21st. I guess we'll, what I'll do is, in the interest of time, I'll just keep this up and we'll skip some of the slides and you can go on the website and see them. So metabolic screens are one example of an unnecessary test. Now, the one I'm choosing to focus on today are full-body radiographic scans, primarily full-body CT scans, and their popularity skyrocketed after Oprah on one of her programs talked about her own experience undergoing this test in 2001. And in 2001, there were 88 centers. A couple years later, there were 161 self-referral body imaging centers. It's hard to get an actual number of what there are today. I've seen data anywhere going from 2 to 500, and they're popping up all the time. There's also a company called Ultralife, which offers real-time color ultrasound of various organs, or for those inclined, a $500 full body scan. But a full body CT scan will cost you anywhere from $1,000 to $2,000. And in a 2004 survey of 500 Americans, they found that 85% would actually choose a full body CT scan over $1,000 in cash. So the companies that offer these tend to prey on people in areas of higher socioeconomic status who can afford the tests, and on the fear of heart disease, cancer, and of course the natural desire to detect health problems early in the hopes of achieving a cure or at least avoiding potentially disfiguring or toxic therapies. These are some other tests of dubious benefit: iridology, pulse and tongue diagnosis. We'll kind of skip through these. Now, the problem with these tests of dubious benefit is that they can lead to recommendations for unproven or dangerous supplements, and they can lead people to avoid standard prescription drugs and surgical treatments in favor of alternative treatments that actually do no good or may in some cases cause harm. Another risk is that of a false positive test, and false positive test results are extremely common among asymptomatic individuals, and the more tests you do, the more likely you are to develop false positive results, which can lead to further unnecessary investigations, additional patient costs, heightened anxiety, and even a risk to one's future insurability. On the other hand, true positive results can lead to overdiagnosis of conditions that would not have become clinically significant, then leading to further risky interventions and possibly adverse effects on mental and even physical health. And one example of this, although still controversial, is certain populations getting PSA screenings. So in addition to the CT scans, a lot of companies are offering pelvic ultrasounds on asymptomatic women to look for ovarian cancer. This could lead to unnecessary laparoscopies, biopsies, complications. And then currently, CT scans for lung cancer screening in both current and former smokers, and by some, the push even among non-smokers to get screened, would actually identify, just in the current and former smokers, 180 million lung nodules. The vast majority of these would be benign. Of course, many of these people would undergo repeated CT scans and then lung biopsies with complications including hemorrhage, infection, lung collapse, and even death. So it's not clear if this would do more harm than good. Now, unnecessary testing tends to be particularly widespread in luxury care clinics. And luxury care really contributes to the erosion of the scientific practice of medicine by offering clients screening tests that are not indicated and can cause more harm than good. And there's no evidence whatsoever that these luxury practices provide a higher quality of care or better outcomes. And these are some examples that you'll see. And I should mention, these luxury clinics are found at all the major academic medical centers in the country now. They will do percent body fat measurements, screening chest x-rays, electron beam CT scans and stress echoes to look for coronary artery disease, which may in fact do more harm than good by exposing the heart and the coronary arteries to fibrosis, possibly worsening coronary artery disease, even increasing the risk of restrictive cardiomyopathy. But this is where a lot of cardiologists make their money. In fact, 30% of Medicare income among private practice cardiologists comes from CT scanners that they own and do electron beam screening CTs with. And for vascular surgeons, the number is around 19%. And the increase in Medicare costs that we've seen just from 2000 to 2006, there was a threefold increase in screening radiographic procedures. And most studies show that one-third of screening CT scans, or CT scans, not screening CT scans, but CT scans ordered under Medicare are unnecessary. It could be replaced with either the clinical exam or an ultrasound, particularly looking at something like appendicitis. Furthermore, luxury care is unfair because technician and equipment time are diverted to produce immediate results, and patients will jump the queue in the radiology and phlebotomy suites while tests for other patients with more appropriate and even more urgent needs may be delayed. The co-linking of luxury clinics with academic medical centers, in fact, facilitates an erosion of professional ethics by perpetuating a two-tiered system of care within institutions that have been traditionally the providers of care to the indigent and where clinicians in training learn the bulk of their professional ethics. And we will skip through these in the interest of time and just briefly touch on, in my last couple minutes here, what might be contributing, at least in part, to the rise of this non-scientific approach to medical care. And at least this is related. And one is the environment of anti-science and pseudoscience that exists under the current Bush administration, where we've seen appointments to key scientific bodies based more on corporate connections and political or religious ideology rather than on scientific expertise. One example of this, one of the more sad, yet in a way comic examples, is David Hagar, who was a member of the FDA's Reproductive Health Advisory Committee, who wrote the book As Jesus Cared for Women, in which he recommended scripture reading as a treatment for PMS. We've seen excessive corporate influence over legislation, and we've seen the rewriting and even suppression of scientific consensus statements, one of the most infamous being the NASA climate change report. So how does one recognize health scams? There are a number of ways. The first is that you'll see claims being pitched directly to the media rather than through publication in peer-reviewed journals. The second is that a discoverer will say that a powerful establishment is trying to suppress his or her work. Appeals will often be made to false authorities, to emotion, or even to magical thinking. And the scientific effect involved will be said to be at the very limits of detection. Evidence for the test or treatment is anecdotal and relies mostly on subjective rather than objective validation. And the promoter states that a belief is credible because it has endured for centuries, much as the belief that the sun and the planets revolved around the earth existed for centuries. There is often also a need to propose new laws of nature to explain an observation. So my general advice to, say, a patient who came to me wanting to know about these screening CT scans, iridology, colonic irrigation therapy, electrodiagnostic pulse analysis, tongue and hair analysis would be first to query healthcare providers about sources of reliable information. I'll often send people to some of the more common ones like WebMD or the NIH or the CDC, although regrettably even a few years ago the NIH had a statement up about linking breast cancer with abortion, which the data show that there is no relationship between having had an abortion and developing breast cancer. But in general, those websites tend to be a little better. Patients should consult providers before obtaining outside screening or diagnostic tests or undergoing alternative treatments. And then finally, the FDA has warned consumers against purchasing medical devices from the internet, including laboratory diagnostic tests to detect serious illnesses. So in conclusion, unnecessary testing is common among both traditional and alternative medical providers. Unfortunately, you will see a lot of traditional providers ordering these tests. The other slide that did not get in here that was in my updated slide is comes from a series of articles in the New England Journal and elsewhere that showed that potentially up to 2% of cancers in the next 2 to 3 decades will be actually caused by CT scans. And the risk of getting a CT pulmonary angiogram to look for pulmonary embolus of getting breast cancer from the one CT scan is about 1 in 241. Now, that sounds very small, but when brought to bear on an entire population, that's a whole lot of breast cancers. And, of course, there's multiple factors involved, what age the patient was when they got the scan. The more scans you get, the higher your risk. The younger you are when you get a scan, the greater your risk. But this could mean a significant contribution to the number of cancers we see in the United States. And then finally, that improved science and health education, more nuanced and responsible communication of medical information by the media, enhanced scientific integrity of governmental bodies, and eliminating or at least limiting the expansion of luxury care as well as better communication between patients and healthcare providers. All of these factors would help contribute to the increased risk of appropriate, less harmful screening practices and to enhanced health outcomes. So this article, which is on my website, is where you can find the references. Papers on luxury care are also available on the website, and the website has a lot more info. And I just made it, right?
Yep, you sure did. Whew.
Okay.
So since he has to leave, we're going to take one or two particularly burning questions. You like what they burn?
Yes, sir.
Do we risk losing some, you know, if we rely entirely on the NIH funded review process, losing some sense of innovation and creativity? Is that, I think that's sufficient to allow that level of innovation to flourish?
No, and there will be occasional, you could get anything from a renegade scientist to someone who's doing industry-sponsored research to someone who's doing their own unfunded research who might come up with new diagnoses and treatments, and certainly not all NIH research is unbiased. One concern that I would state, though, that relates to this is that the percentage of the overall U.S. research budget has become increasingly co-opted by pharmaceutical companies rather than NIH. And there's secrecy there, of course, with failure to publish results, with delays in publication. Now, open access submission through the clinical trials registry of your methodology in advance is designed to cut down on that, at least to cut down on publication in major academic medical journals. But that is a potential problem. Yes, ma'am?
Do you have a feeling about, or are you familiar with a form of treatment for prostate cancer that would involve repeated CAT scans in terms of guided radiation, tomotherapy?
I haven't heard of that. Certainly some people use brachytherapy, which is putting radioactive rods into the prostate for local radiation therapy. But it sounds like what you're talking about is something like the gamma knife for brain cancers that focuses intense radiation on a spot in the prostate. And I can certainly imagine that would be a rational treatment, but I don't unfortunately know anything about the data. Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. I certainly understand the alternative methods and worry that those aren't well researched. Mm-hmm. And I guess I'm starting to think that, well, what's the difference between screening for lung cancer and screening for breast cancer? That what we do for women is identify a lot of things that would never have been a problem. And that, you know, I'm not sure that, you know, 10, 15 years ago the evidence would have been there for mammograms.
Well, yeah, and that's opening up a huge, huge can of worms on where mammographic screening is best. For instance, many investigators now feel that breast self-exam is of no utility whatsoever in terms of decreasing mortality from breast cancer. And many would argue that that mammograms only in women over age 50 provide a mortality benefit. I
so
could go on for hours, but I...
Years ago, there were already 8 separate randomized controlled trials showing evidence for benefit for MRD treatment. Since then, there have been a number of observational studies that have evidence support that attention, even though there's still some debate about it, that demographic screening. There's not a single randomized controlled trial showing any benefit for lung cancer treatment. In fact, the observational trials that have been done have recently been shown to be contaminated by scientific fraud. And so I think there's a big difference between MRD screening and lung cancer.
Yeah, if I was a woman smoker, I would be getting mammograms from age 50 on. I would not be getting screening CT scans, if this one doctor's opinion means anything.
there are current randomized trials ongoing for lung cancer. So it's interesting to see what they find.
Okay.
This is one report out of the lung cancer screening trial showing some evidence of some populations. The Akron trial on the National Lung Cancer Screening. I think they have some results for some populations. They don't have a complete finding yet.
Yeah, the bigger one out of Cornell, though, was contaminated by tobacco money that was funneled through the dean's office in a very surreptitious manner.
No, this is an NCI-sponsored trial for PCR imaging network. I wasn't even
I sorry. I don't want to